Welcome to Creative Maine, an hour-long monthly program produced for and broadcast by WERU 89.9 FM, Blue Hill, Maine, and at WERU.org. This show considers the making of craft, fine art, food, literature, music, dance, museums, and any other form of creative expression here in Maine. We also discuss topics of global cultural significance and interest. My name is Adina Salmonson, and I am your host for this monthly exploration of all things creative. Should you have comments, questions, input, or suggestions for the show, send them to info@weru.org. Please list Creative Maine in the subject line. The life of the arts is a test of the quality of a nation's civilization, said JFK. As a lifelong musician and crafter, I am thrilled to be presenting my areas of interest and passion to you on our wonderful community radio station right here in my Orland backyard. On today's show, we will chat with three wonderful guests, Astrid Tangway of the Makers Guild of Maine, Rich Hewitt from the Signatures Online Gallery of the Witherly Memorial Library in Castine, and Silas Yates, the musician, teacher, and subject of the next Signatures exhibition. Hello, Astrid. I'm so glad you could come on our program. Welcome to Creative Maine. And I am speaking today with Astrid Koltukian Tangway, who will introduce herself a little more and tell us about her own personal making journey. Tell us about yourself, Astrid.
Well, hi, Adina. I'm sorry about that. Thank you very much for having me. I have been in Maine for 30 years now and brought my passion of fabric design and sewing and then all the bits and pieces that have spun off of it, both into our campground and later on into our not-for-profit, the Makers Guild of Maine.
What's your campground? Tell us about that.
So we're at Sears Port Shores Campground. My husband and I run it, and we've been here for 30 years. And since we got here, we've put on two sound stages. We've got a dye barn and printing shop, and we have an art studio. So we've taken all the things that we really enjoy about art, music, and education. We've combined it with what we call a garden kitchen, which is a commercial kitchen right in the middle of our garden so that we can share food. And we've really focused all of our attention on bringing authenticity to our guests. We really combine our entire community. So at the campground, it's easy to be with local people, local artists or non-artists, and people traveling from all over the world. I mean, particularly the campground gets folks from Florida to Nova Scotia, but we certainly get our share of Midwesterners. And it's really something special when everybody gets together to share their own passion, and it just sort of ferments. It really makes everything bubble.
That's really interesting. I mean, you and I were talking before we recorded about the concept of experiential tourism or cultural tourism. Can you explain how you fit into that and what that phenomenon is?
I can. We have always believed that traveling is about making connections with the people. The landscape is certainly important, and everything that makes Maine special matters. But if you don't get to know the people that are staying here, and we do it with ways that, well, are experiential. You know, if you go down to the beach and you pick up beach pebbles and you learn to crush them and turn them into paint, and then you go on to take a painting class with those paints, you carry home something that you're never going to be able to buy in a gallery, or you'll never share in the same way that you would an Instagram shot. And the idea is you have to touch it. You have to feel it. When you talk about all the pebbles on the beach, for example, And you can point to the green paint in the landscape that you painted then and say, I picked this up on Sears Island. You're never going to forget Sears Island. If we get you playing a fiddle someplace and you're on the stage with our people from, you know, on both sides of the bay, and you're playing a French Canadian fiddle tune that you may never have heard or never played before, you're going to go home saying, this was extra special. And our whole point is that anytime you're here, you feel as though it's extra special because it takes a lot of work to get to Midcoast Maine.
Mm-hmm. It does. And how does this wonderful sense of place and experience contribute to the overall health of the arts in Maine? Do you think it bolsters it with further tourism and further engagement?
Well, I think that the culture and the art are such a big economic boon or boost to the Maine economy. And I feel like what we do through the Makers Guild of Maine and here at the campground is bring fresh money and fresh resources so that it circulates more. I think the latest statistic was every cultural dollar that's spent in Maine is recirculated for $11 worth of revenue.
Oh, that's
exciting.
And when
we can keep it here. Yeah. Yeah. So everybody wins. And because our programs are really focused on bringing new people and fresh people into the whole circle, we're constantly looking to reach that person that may never have thought of coming to Maine or never thought about taking a felting class. But once they take that felting class here, then they're paying more attention to the breeds of sheep that they're seeing when they drive past whatever fields they happen to be seeing. Mm-hmm. Or they go into a yarn store and they say, I want Icelandic wool from Maine, or I'm looking for Nash Farm wool. Now they've got something even more special to bring home. And if they happen to have dyed it with Coreopsis and spent time with one of our shepherds, then you just can't beat that.
Absolutely not. Did you set out to make Searsport Shores an arts campground, or has that evolved over time?
I think it's fair to say it evolved. We knew that we wanted people that were looking to stay 5 days or a week or longer. And we wanted people that were interested in more than just a day trip to Camden and a day trip to Bar Harbor. And art and music sort of became the vehicle that allowed us to achieve that goal. Before I came into the campground, I used to design fabrics in France. So I worked with a lot of companies designing clothing and the prints. So I had a textile background. My father was an upholsterer. So he brought the whole sewing and then the wood carving in. My husband is a master gardener and is always building rock formations and things to enhance the campground. So the art piece was easy because it's who we are. And if we didn't share it, then we wouldn't be going in the authentic direction we wanted to.
Sure. So how did the Makers Guild of Maine grow out of all of this wonderful experience?
About 25 years ago, I went to a UNESCO conference in Montreal, and we were all gathered together. I was representing the state of Maine with a delegation of about six people, and people from all over the world were talking about the value of cultural tourism and the difference between that and what they were calling canned tourists, people that came in on buses or people that came on big boats, and how experiential tourism and cultural tourism was a vehicle that allowed us to tread more softly on the land. It allowed us to slow down, not trample the things that we feel are most important to us. And what I walked away with was all these wonderful examples of people going to the Appalachian Mountains and learning to weave baskets, or those who traveled to Peru to do natural colors on yarn or fabric. And when we looked around here in Maine, we realized that we've got all these same artisans. We've got such a strong craftsman culture here that we couldn't imagine anything more authentic than to have an arts-based campground. And it just sort of evolved. The different buildings that we put up all came because we needed more space to provide the activities that we wanted to. So the Makers Guild then spun off of the Fiber College. I think I'm getting ahead of myself. But basically, our art programs got too big to be run under the umbrella of the campground. And we were looking to give far more back than we could as a profit-based business. So we created the Makers Guild of Maine with the intention of bringing this experience to both Maine people and people from away, and supporting lending libraries both for fiber tools and for musical instruments.
That's a wonderful concept. Now, you do that with the library in Searsport, yes?
The Carver Memorial Library has really, really partnered with us. So if you want to play an instrument anywhere on Mid-Coast and you don't have one, you don't have the resources for whatever reason, you can go to the Carver Memorial Library, look through the cards of what's available, and then pick up an instrument. We've got wonderful people that keep those instruments in good shape. We can help people get lessons. It's a way that we can offset what we feel is a real lack of music and art in schools. And it's not just for kids. You know, having it available for adults, I think, is just as important, if not more important, because then the children that are in that home or around those people are exposed to music they never would have been exposed to.
Absolutely.
And through the lending library.
Yeah, go ahead. I was going to say something about the values that are transmitted by that kind of activity too.
Yeah, the simple fact of practicing to get better and the different music that you become exposed to. You can borrow a ukulele, a recorder, you can borrow an upright bass, an electric guitar. There's violins and cellos, really. Any stringed instrument in particular is available, and it's at no cost. We simply ask that when you borrow it, you use it, you return it in good shape, and you pass on that love to whoever might be paying attention to.
Oh, what a wonderful concept that is. So, all right. So I know that on your campground grounds, and in fact, you're outside right now, and I hear the occasional animal conversation behind you. What do the fiber animals do for the campground there?
So we originally got Angora goats to control the poison ivy in the campground. And once you have two Angora goats and realize how much you love them, then you have to have three and four. And then with the mohair, you need to have wool because it makes a nicer yarn. So now we have four goats and four sheep. And each of our sheep represents a different kind of wool so that we can have wool for blankets and sweaters, but also for rugs and shoes and slippers and socks, that kind of thing.
And so we know that when we stay at the campground, we will not get poison ivy.
You will not get poison ivy. You can share all of your bits of vegetables and fruit and pieces of bread with all the fiber animals. If you want to take home something special, you know, we have all of our wool processed locally, and many times we're even dyeing it from the plants in the garden. So you can go to the shop, pick those up. And then we have a flock of hens that are very spoiled. And they are always looking for that extra piece of corn on the cob that somebody might have. So you can get fresh eggs in the campground store too.
That's tremendous. So tell us how our listeners here at WERU can benefit from and get involved with the Makers Guild of Maine. What if you are a knitter or some other kind of crafter? What can you do to get involved with the Makers Guild?
Everybody's got a place here. So the best thing to do is look at the website makersguildmaine.org and get an idea of the different programs. If you'd like to volunteer, we always need people that want to cook or play music or share their art passions. If you want somebody to help you, then we're always happy to try to blend people together so that we make the community even stronger. That would be a good place to start for the guild. And then for the campground, if you go to campocean.com, there's an events page. And then you get to see who all the artists in residence are, because I didn't get a chance to talk about the fact that all through the summer, we have a different artist stay in the art studio every week. And those programs are available always to the campers who are staying here. But locally, if there's something you're passionate about, we're more than happy to figure out how to have you join us.
Now, we didn't talk much about Fiber College. We have a minute left or so. Let's talk a little bit about that.
So the Fiber College has got two different ways of accessing it this year. For people who want to just try all sorts of different things, over Labor Day weekend, we're hosting open studios. And what it'll be is we've got three different studio spaces opened up with 10 artists spread out between them. And over the course of Saturday and Sunday, you can freely access any one of the programs that are going on. So there's woodworking, there's weaving, there's felting, natural dyeing, sewing. There's something for everybody. And the idea is it's a good multi-generational thing to come and do. You buy a wristband, and with that wristband on, you can come and go at your pleasure with whatever programs there are. So if somebody's traveling, a 40-year-old and a 10-year-old, there's still something for both. The idea is the more we make together, the stronger we are.
That's wonderful. I love that. So thank you. So
can I just sneak in?
Yes.
That the week after, we host the Fiber College Touchstone Retreats. And those are for people who want to take a deep dive into their own passion. And there's five different courses. You choose one and you stay with us for 5 days. And we prepare all the food, take care of all the details. And you learn things like paper sculpture or what happens between shearing a sheep and weaving a shawl. There's a little bit of everything, and you'll see that on the Makers Guild website.
All right. So tell us that website URL again, please.
It's makersguildmaine with an E.org.
Perfect. Well, Astrid, it's been such a pleasure. I've enjoyed chatting with you very, very much. If our listeners are interested in even more information, please go to weru.org and you will find a thumbnail about Ostrig and the Makers Guild of Maine under Creative Maine tab. Thank you so, so very much.
Thanks, Adina. Take care and come visit.
I intend to. I cannot wait. Thank you. Welcome, Rich Hewitt from Castine, from the Signatures Online Gallery from the Witherly Library. Welcome to Creative Maine. I'm so glad that you could come on and be with us today. We're changing gears a little bit. We're going from the sheep and the goats to the books and the artwork. So I'm very excited to hear about this online gallery, how it started, what it's all about, and what your next exhibition is going to be. So Rich Hewitt lives in Castine and works very closely with Catherine Dillon, who is also part of this Signatures Online Gallery. So, Rich, can you tell us what exactly is an online gallery and what is the focus of the Signatures Online Gallery?
Okay. Well, thanks for having me. And an online gallery is just what it says. It's an art gallery, and art is a loose term for us, mm-hmm. but it's where we provide an exhibit online. And we think because we're able to use a lot of different technology, we can do a little bit more in terms of audio, video, mm-hmm. and things like that than a brick and mortar gallery might be able to do. So that's what we view as an online gallery. And it's really the focus is the point of the gallery is to promote local artists, but the main goal is to create an archive, a record of the artists who live and work in the Castine area.
Mm. Well, you know, I did a little research before we got together, and I looked and could not find another Maine-based online gallery. So I think you're fairly unique, and what a wonderful idea to be able to highlight local artists. So how did you come up with the concept for Signatures? Did you base it on another gallery that you saw?
No, this was something that we kind of grew organically out of our desire to do something with local artists. The pandemic kind of precluded us from doing anything live. Mm-hmm. So we started migrating our thoughts to an online presence. And apparently lots of libraries are doing that nowadays, where they're developing programs that can be accessed, what is the word, asynchronously?
Yeah.
I just heard that word today. So.
Oh, my goodness. I taught high school, and it was a lot of asynchronicity. Let's just.
Right. Yes. Right. So it's basically programs that can be, that patrons can get to whenever they want to. They're available online.
I think it's interesting that you're based in a library. I think when people think of galleries and art and museum kind of exhibitions, they think of museums, not so much libraries. And libraries are repositories for archives, of course, but archives can mean just about anything, can't it?
It can these days, particularly with the kinds of technology that are available to us.
What does a typical exhibition at Signatures Gallery look like, sound like?
We have a fairly rigid format, but there's an awful lot of freedom within that rigidity. We have a basic formula that we use, but we work very closely with the artists. So basically we have 8 boxes on our website, and in those boxes, working with the artists, we determine what goes in to those boxes. Mm-hmm. And those boxes are very deep. They can contain a lot of different things. You mentioned museums, and I was trying to find a metaphor, and this site is like a museum, and that each of these boxes is like a wing of a museum. And inside each wing, you can have lots of different aspects, each particular artist.
So what are some of the experiences that a gallery viewer would have?
There's always the artwork. And in that way, it resembles a traditional gallery. Whatever medium the artist is working in is part of that gallery experience. But one of the important things that we've been able to do is we have a taped interview with the artist. Alicia Onsted is an arts educator and journalist, and she lives right here in Castine, and she's done all the interviews for us. And it's a wonderful addition to have the artist speaking in his or her own words. And to be able to keep that as a record for the library.
That's terrific. So it's visual, it's audio, all the senses. That's fantastic. So tell me something about yourself. What did you do in your previous life, or in the case of you and Catherine, previous lives, to prepare you for this project?
Well, I was a newspaper reporter for about 30 years. before I retire. So I just researching, asking questions, finding out information is that's what I did. Catherine has a very varied background, but it includes a lot of work in digital graphics. Mm-hmm. So between the two of us, we managed to to come up with something.
Yes. Well, yeah. You're an artist, or a writer, I should say. Is anybody among you a visual artist or a musician?
Not really. I rely on my wife. My wife's a musician, but no, we have a great appreciation for the arts among us, and are learning more as we go through these different artists. So far we've had quite a variety. Like I said, our view of art is very expansive. So we've had painters, sculptors, a wood turner, a photographer, a philosopher, and now a musician. So
how did the both of you come to collaborate?
Well, we share a job. And for a long time, I worked Monday through Wednesday, and she was Thursday through Saturday. So we saw each other two or three times a year and did most of our business through emails or sticky notes. But after the pandemic, our roles expanded. The online role of the library expanded, and so now we overlap in the middle of the middle of the week, and we can work together on projects like this.
That's tremendous. And how did you get funding for a project like this? It's kind of huge.
Well, this is a very important part of how we did this, because we had a grant from the Maine Community Foundation and a grant from the Castanin Arts Association. And both of those were kind of seed money to get the ball rolling. But early on, we discovered that the vision we had for what we wanted to do, our existing website couldn't handle it. So the board, the library director and the board of trustees made a fairly hefty investment in beefing up the website so it could do all the things we want to do with the gallery, as well as some other online projects that we're hoping to do down the line. So that might be prohibitive for some libraries, but Castine is a very historic town, and there's the community embraces that history. So we've had a lot of support indirectly and directly through the Castine community.
Well, one thing that's very interesting about anything online is that it's available to the entire world, essentially. We talk a little bit about experiential tourism in my previous interview. And in this case, you can have an experience in Maine without ever setting foot in Maine. You can take advantage of the arts in Maine, which is a fantastic thing. And I'm sure that the municipality sees that potential.
Well, we've had a lot of positive feedback from the local community, and we get a lot of hits on the website, so we're able to track that. And I think Catherine said last year we had over 1,400 visits to the gallery, to Signatures.
So can you tell where the visitors are based, or is that not part of the metrics?
Yeah, and you know, you get a lot from Maine because they're local artists. But yeah, we've the philosopher I mentioned has he's involved in international associations. So we're getting hits now from all over the world.
That's very wonderful.
Yeah, well, it's very exciting.
yeah, it's reaching out and touching the other side of the world, essentially. It sort of blows my mind. Yeah. So who is the next subject of your gallery? What's the next exhibition coming up?
Yeah, the one we're working on finishing up right now is Silas Yates. He lives here in Castine. He's a musician, and he's involved in a number of different musical organizations. Most prominent locally is he's the director of the Castine Town Band. Mm-hmm. But he also organizes, directs, and plays in several other musical organizations here in Castine and regionally, as far away as Bangor.
Wow. So I think we'll be able to hear a few clips of Cy playing. He's a trombonist, yes?
He is, yeah.
Very, very interesting. I think that'll be fun. So how was he chosen? What was the criteria that you looked at?
He had a strong connection to Castine. He's been here for a number of years. He's very involved in the local music scene. And that basically he's a local artist living and working here in town. And that's really the basic criteria for what we're trying to do with the gallery.
Wow. So how can our listeners find the gallery? How can they take advantage of the gallery?
Well, it's the Witherly Memorial Library website. You can Google us.
And so how do you spell Witherly? Can you help us with
that? Yeah, it's W-I-T-H-E-R-L-E. And it's the website is witherlylibrary.net.
Okay. Yeah. And what would it take for someone to start their own online gallery, aside from, I guess, a lot of bandwidth?
A lot of bandwidth and a lot of time. Each one of these exhibits that we put up can take, depending on the artist, can take between 4 and 6 months to put together. And that's because it's not just, we don't just take pictures and put them on the website. There's a lot of editing, a lot of production that goes into all of this. And that's primarily what Catherine does all of that. So we gather all the information that we need, and then she works on putting that and making the exhibit an artistic presentation as well as the art that's within it.
Very good. Very good. Well, I think our listeners will very much enjoy stopping by to visit the online gallery. I so appreciate your time. I wish you all the best of luck with this gallery and hope that you have exhibits down the road for many years to come. I think it's a wonderful concept. And thank you so much for coming on with me and talking to our listeners at Creative Maine. Thank you so much, Rich.
Well, thank you. And I hope your listeners will visit us at the library and at Signatures.
It's well worth it. I did do my poking around there and it was quite entertaining. So I think everyone should go and take a look.
Well, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Creative Maine is alive with activities, presentations, workshops, concerts, and all manner of cultural endeavors. At this point in the show, we highlight a few of the many calendar items going on around the region. Today's calendar segments highlight summer gatherings around the region. Wednesdays on Maine in Bucksport is a program that brings fun, energy, and joy to Bucksport in the summer months. Every Wednesday, and sometimes Thursdays, musical, theatrical, and food events are offered on Main Street. For the calendar for the rest of the summer, visit www.bucksportwednesdayonmaine.com. And that's all one word,
The Bangor Band is celebrating its 165th year of making music for the Bangor community. Every Tuesday, concerts feature your musical friends and neighbors. Concerts are always fun and always free. Tuesday, July 23rd, the band plays at 6:45 at the Bangor Waterfront. July 30th will be at the Veazey Community School. And August 6th, the band will perform at the Chapin Park Block Party with a program especially for kids, including an instrument petting zoo, a Meet the Band activity, and family-friendly musical selections. For more information, go to www.bangorband.org. Castine Uncovered Walking Tours. Take in the sights and sounds of Castine while learning about this beautiful town and its historical significance. Meet your guide for the hour-long tour at 10 o'clock a.m. in front of the Abbott School, 17 School Street, Fridays, Saturdays, and Mondays. No reservations are required. Tours are held through October 14th. For more information, go to castinehistoricalsociety.org. For a more complete listing of events, visit our website, weru.org, and click the Community Calendar tab. If you would like to add an item to the community calendar, you may follow the prompts on the calendar page and submit your own event for the list. If you have an event that you feel is particularly pertinent to Creative Maine, send a note with the details to info@weru.org and list Creative Maine in the subject line. So we just heard from Rich Hewitt all about the Signatures Online Gallery. The gallery is highlighting creatives and leaders in the arts in Castine. And Silas Yates has agreed to come on to Creative Maine. Thanks for coming on the program, Silas. You're the subject of the current exhibition at the Signatures Online Gallery. So welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
You have mentioned that you are as much an organizer as a musician, and I would argue that the organizing of the arts is as much of a creative activity as performing or painting. Today, I'd like to explore both halves of your creativity, both the playing and the part of you that loves to make things happen in our arts community. So describe for us a little of the long and winding road that led you to Castine.
I was elected the president of the band at Phillips Exeter Academy for reasons that aren't clear to me. I don't even remember if I was in the band at the time. And that band is entirely student run. And I decided with the other two officers that we would march. We had never marched before. And so that was my first music organizing job. And in addition to that, there's a dance band at Exeter called the Royal Exonians, and I ended up rehearsing that. And I was primarily inspired by Phil Wilson, who was the son of one of my history teachers at Exeter. And he would rehearse the band, and I learned a lot about rehearsing bands and music from him and trombone playing. So
you are a trombonist, yes.
Yes.
Okay.
And so is Phil.
So there are three different types of groups that you have organized, or four different types, actually, that you have organized and you currently perform with. So tell us a little bit about a brass quintet. I noticed that you are in the Castine Brass. Were you the founder of the Castine Brass?
No, when I moved to Maine in 2000, it was a larger brass group. They were playing Civil War type music. And I think over a period of 2 years, it became a brass quintet. And brass quintets are two trumpets, a French horn trombone, and a tuba. And it's a form of brass chamber music that has become very popular in the last 40 or 50 years. And so I ended up running that group for, I guess, because I was the best player. I don't know. And I've been doing that since probably 2002.
Oh, so quite a while. How do you choose the literature that you play in the Castine Brass?
Well, there's two criteria I have. One is I have to like it. And two, we have to be able to play it. And just so you'll know, our book is well over 200 pieces in our Castine Brass book.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I know that, let's see, what do you play in the near term with the Castine Brass?
We don't have any gigs coming up, but they, with these, a lot of the small groups, they just pop up. And for example, we just played the opening of the new steps at the Pantagoet Inn in downtown Castine about 2 weeks ago. And so that was the kind of group where we played a gig where we played so what I refer to as rah-rah music, like marches and things like that. And we did play the Leonard Bernstein Make Our Garden Grow for that gig because I like it.
Well, that's a beautiful tune. Maybe we'll get to hear a little bit of it here. I notice you also play with a group called Interplay, and you have a couple of dates coming up for Interplay that intrigued listeners may attend, specifically August 3rd at Surrey Arts Barn. So tell me, what kind of an ensemble is Interplay? Who are the members? And what kind of music do you play?
Interplay is a jazz quintet. It has Bobby Duran on drums, Dave Halverson on bass, James Williams guitar, Steve Orlowski on various woodwinds, and me on trombone. And jazz groups run the gamut from singles, where a guitar player will just play a single, to duos, which I've seen quite effective. Trios are quite common with piano, bass, and drums. And then you add two horn players and you have a quintet. And jazz groups generally have not been too much bigger than quintets because it's hard to make a living when you have more people to pay.
That's true. So how does the music work in that kind of an ensemble?
Basically, what we do is the horns usually play the melody, and then we each member of the group will improvise over the chords that underlie the melody. And and that includes the bass player. And often the bass player and the drummer will do what we call trading fours, where they trade four measure segments of the tune. So a tune can easily take 5 minutes by the time everybody's played. We played the melody and then soloed on the tune.
So there's a melody. And that's called the head, right?
That's
and then
correct.
You each take turns playing a solo over those chords.
That's correct.
And then the head comes back.
Yeah, and then we play the head. And as we get more organized, we'll have an introduction to the melody and some kind of coda at the end of the head often. So.
Well, that's cool. So let's see. Maybe we can hear a little bit of The Sign of Libra.
That's by a Polish Yugoslavian trumpet player named Dusko Gojkovic, who came to the United States, went to Berklee College of Music, played in some of the best bands in the country, and played with some of the best jazz players in the country. And many people have not heard of him, and hardly anybody has heard of this tune that he wrote called In the Sign of Libra. Thank you.
sentimental journey. That suggests we're hearkening back to a previous era. What is sentimental journey?
So, sentimental journey is a jazz band. Jazz bands derived from dance bands. And nowadays, a lot of dances are just rock and roll and nothing personal. But the jazz band are now basically compositions of jazz composers. And they're mainly composed of four trumpets, four trombones, five saxes, piano, bass, drums, and guitar. And Sentimental Journey, I think it's been in existence for close to 30 years. And I started playing in it in about 2002. One rehearsal, the guy who was rehearsing it was late. And so I did the rehearsal. And that's how I ended up being the person who ran that band group.
Ain't that always the way you step up and get railroaded?
I co-direct that group with Don Menninghouse. So it's a trombone-directed group.
Oh, and just for full transparency here, I am a trombonist, and I play with Cy in Sentimental Journey, and I can tell you it's a whale of a good time. Just for our listeners, how does that kind of jazz form differ from what you do in Interplay?
Interplay is basically a group of improvisers. Most of the things we play with Sentimental Journey have a section where someone in the band improvises. But if you look at the amount of time in the tune that's devoted to improvisation, it's probably at the most one third. Whereas in a small jazz group, it's at least half or more than half of what you're playing.
How did you get involved in yet another kind of musical ensemble called the Castine Town Band? What's that all about? It has a long history, and I'm certain you didn't start it, but you certainly do keep it alive.
It started, I believe, this iteration of the band started, I believe, in 1998. It was started by Justin Cooper and Dick Stark. Justin Cooper played euphonium, Dick Stark played French horn. And once again, I started playing in this band when I moved to Maine in 2000. And once again, the conductor was late for rehearsal. And once again, I started the rehearsal and I ended up being the director, probably 2024. So well, 20 years.
Wow. And I know that you do a lot of work for the Castine Town Band. You don't just arrive and wave your arms around. So tell me a little bit about what you do with the Castine Town Band.
Well, first of all, there's the mechanical things. For example, on Wednesday, I have Sentimental Journey rehearsal and Town Band rehearsal back to back. And for those two rehearsals, I set up the band, and that gives me 2 miles on my pedometer. That's just part of it. Then there's the cajoling of all the people in the band. So right now I'm probably up to 75 emails talking to people in the Castine Town Band about the July 4th concert. Mm-hmm. I've had concerts that ran as much as 400 emails. And the same thing is true on a smaller level with Sentimental Journey because of the summer, for example, people go on vacation. So you try to find subs and you have to make a decision whether you even have enough people to play a rehearsal.
Wow. So who are the players in the town band? Who do you recruit and cajole?
Basically, we recruit anybody that has a beating heart. When I meet new people that come to Castine, I immediately try to recruit them into the percussion section, whether they can play an instrument or not. We have some school children. We have two people that just are starting their freshman year in high school, and another girl who's in the Adams School in town. We have, I think maybe I'm the oldest person in the band, but we have a bunch of very good players, including you, Adina, that allow us to play real music in the town band. So we have a very good first clarinetist, a very good oboist, a very good flute players, several, very good trombone section, very good saxophone section. And so that's why we can do real music in our town band.
So if one of our listeners wants to have a musical experience, hasn't played their instrument since high school and is now facing retirement, they would be an ideal candidate for the band. They can dust their instrument off and start playing again. So how may interested listeners join you to play with the band? How do they
call me?
Okay. So where can one find you? Is there a website that the Castine Town Band has, or a Facebook presence?
No, we don't. We should have, but you can call the town office and they'll hook me up with them.
Okay. So call the Castine Town offices. That's perfect. All right. Well, talk about another institution here in Maine that you are the driving force behind. It's called the Just for Fun Trombone Concert, and it's coming up this year on August 10th. Where is it? What is it?
It is a concert of trombone players. Occasionally, we'll get a trumpet player from this area and from the Boston area who give a concert. And this has been going on for, I think, close to 40 years. It was originally organized by a trombone player named Don Blodgett to give a concert to raise money for the organ maintenance in the Elm Street Congregational Church the Bucksport Congregational Church in Bucksport. So basically we get between 10 and 25 trombone players. And as it turns out, people have written tons of trombone music. I personally have two file boxes of trombone music in my barn. And so we play trombone, pieces that you would know that were rearranged for trombone. And then a big part of that group is a group called the Gazeboons, and they rehearse during the year in the Boston area. And then for a vacation, they come up to Camden, camp out and play trombone. And so they form a big part of the trombone concert.
Well, you are one of the busiest trombone players I know, and we're all better off for it. And congratulations on being the subject of the Signatures Online Gallery. I very much look forward to exploring that. And thank you so much. Thank you so much to my wonderful guests, Astrid Tangway, Rich Hewitt, and Silas Yates. We had so much fun exploring the Makers Guild of Maine, online galleries, and the life and times and music of Silas Yates today. Our theme music is composed and performed by Ariel Chapman. We heard the Castine Brass playing Make Your Garden Grow, the Interplay Jazz Combo playing In the Sign of Libra, and jazz band Sentimental Journey playing Groovin' Hard, and Silas Yates playing Autumn Leaves. If you have questions or comments for me or any of our guests, please send them to info@weru.org. Please write Creative Maine in the subject line. Please join Creative Maine at WERU 89.9 FM or on weru.org for another eclectic episode on August 15th at 4 p.m., when we will have a romp through the Maine Fiber Frolic. Thank you so much for listening. This is Adina Salmonson, wishing you a wonderful month of the arts and crafts that enrich your life and bring you joy.